C1A, number 19B.
It's indivisible from its expression. In other words, love can never be without its expression. And here, the expression is what? Is life. Can never be without its living expression. Can never be deprived of its living expression. And so, in life, reading it through, you get a sense, perhaps, of the eternality of life and the deathlessness of life. But in various ways, the tone, not the word, not the term appears, you get the irresistibility of life. I think that's the main point. See, sometimes you just get the tone through various terms and wordings and phrases, which we can't just put the finger on it and say which word it is. But the touch you will feel in it is that irresistibility, that irrepressibility of life, that life cannot be pressed down. What is irrepressible and is irresistible. And love says, and I hold that expression constantly awake and awake. Inseparable, I hold life irrepressible to God. And therefore we get here that whole subject of Jesus overcoming death. It's all about the belief in death and how love doesn't rest. That love has such a love for us that love doesn't rest and doesn't rest until we capitulate in the belief of death and accept and come to the bosom of God, accept that life is indivisible from God, and being indivisible from God is irrepressible. As it's that nothing on earth can, well, press it down, no, can destroy it, no, can hold it down, you see. What is the other word? Extinguish. Now, let's see how she evolves that tone. See, I put it like this. You may put it again another way. That the purpose of love to demonstrate life cannot be defeated, cannot be defeated. That there is nothing in all the world that can defeat the purpose of love to hold her expression alive. Nothing can defeat. Again, as we have seen yesterday, we have from time to time, and the more we do it, we have to ask questions to us and say, now we have studied for years the synonymous term, and we have given lip service to it, and we have professed to the definition of God. Is it genuine? If it is genuine, we see that we know that love is God, and God is love. And love means not L-O-V, but that it means that there exists in reality a divine fact which forever is inseparable from its expression. And we profess that God is life, and that life is God, and that therefore life is indestructible. Therefore, we profess in these two cases, we profess that we firmly believe that in reality, and in reality there is the only reality, and next to that reality nothing worthwhile, that in reality there is a divine fact which expresses itself always in loveliness, and that loveliness can never be extinguished, can never be defeated. That which God created, and God is the creator of all, and the only creator, that which God has created, that is kept in at the bosom of love, and circled by love, cherished by love, and that nothing on earth can defeat that. Now, do we believe it? If we do, then, she says, then, as mine, we must give up that ugly, stupid, universal belief that, and we must give up that, and must see a bit more light. That's what she says. And we must see that the mortal, that death is just the mortal dream, which comes in darkness but disappears with the light. If we see the light of the fact of love as light, then we have started at the point of mind, we have seen the light. And we are no more believing what the world believes, namely in death. No more. And no, under no circumstance, whatever happens, no matter if we are at the funeral or anywhere, we just don't believe it anymore. It disappears with life. Then, as spirit, she says, then this purpose of love to demonstrate life can never be defeated by the belief that life must have a body, or must have a material concomitant. We never believe it anymore. First, we never believe anymore that life can die, that there is sex. We never believe anymore that life sucks. And then second, we go and believe no more. Either we are with so-called living mortals or with so-called dead mortals. We are no more believing that life has anything to do with the body or with matter, and that life is dependent on life is that we never believe anymore that life anywhere, anyway, dependent on the status of matter, whatever matter testifies on the status of matter. If the universal belief says there is a lot of life in that old boy, or if it says there is no more life in it, or just a little bit of life in it, or just sinful life in it, or such an unhealthy life in it, or just social life in it, it just no more connects life with matter. And third, the purpose of love demonstrates life can then never be any more defeated by any malignity and brutality, by any subtlety, by any malicious animal madness, by any accident or whatever it is. We begin to see that how subtle, however subtle, the belief may creep in and say, well, there is just the same an end of to life. And that through all sorts of subtlety and of working up in through animal magnetism a situation where that can kill life just the same. We no more believe in that. We no more believe in that. That's what Jesus proved, that he showed there that the malignity and brutality and the treason and the mockery of his persecutors just had one effect on him, namely that it perpetuated and extended Jesus' influence. It couldn't stay his influence. Let's think of that. That however, whatever tries to kill this idea of science, whoever we are going want to go to blame for it, whatever situation we are going to blame for it, it's not true. Our standpoint is that life is kept in the arms of love and not at the hands of persecutors, malignity, brutality, and so on. It's always untouched by any stuff. And so we come further, that when we really believe in love as demonstrating irresistible life, then this life can never be defeated by the verdicts of human law. It says there that human laws, like medicine, hygiene, surgery, and so on, like to put down a law about life and death. But it says in science and in the divine law, there is no death. We can never kill 2 and 2 are 4. We would never dream of it. We would never dream of it that 2 and 2 equal 4 can be killed, because we know it is a scientific fact. The little child who looks at 2 and 2 are 4 on the blackboard, and when he sees that it is wiped out, may still believe now it's no more. But the moment that pupil has learned that it is a scientific fact, the school teacher can wipe it out as often as he wants, saying it's indestructible. And so it should be with life, with our life, with life at all, with the universal life. The moment we perceive life as a scientific proposition, we would never dream that anything can destroy it. Never. We would never dream of it. Then she goes on and shows that this life can never be defeated by depriving anybody or any situation of the material method of sustenance. We think that life is dependent on the sustenance of a material sense of life, on food, air, exercise, hygiene, and so on. And that if we take away food and air and everything, that then we can kill life, and that life then has an end. And so Jesus had to prove that. And in his tomb, he shows that he could sustain life, that life was sustaining life, and that life was sustaining life in spite that he was deprived of every method of material life or means of material life. He had no drug to allay inflammation. He did not depend on food or pure air to resuscitate his wasted energy, nor did he require a surgeon to heal the torn palms and bind up the wounded side. See, he was completely deprived of everything that humanly says, I can sustain life. And of everything which, if we are deprived of, the Hume belief says, now that's the end of life. And so Jesus proved that eternal fact, which is an eternal fact for every one of us, even if it's a fact, if we don't prove it, it's just the same a fact. The only thing is that we don't experience it yet. But it's a fact, and that's the bigness of his mission. That's why we begin to see that his motive for going to the cross must have been love for mankind, to show mankind something which the human mind would never have believed and never have accepted. Show that life is sustained by life. And he let his persecutors deprive him of everything that humanly seems to sustain life, and just the same proved life. And so we come further to truth and see how the purpose of love, to demonstrate life, can never be defeated by any humanly insurmountable obstruction. What he had to prove in addition to that was that not only if one takes away everything that humanly is believed to be the sustenance and support of life, he also lets them put up every obstacle to hide life in matter. He lets them it says that the rock-ripped walls there in the way, and the great stone must be rolled away from the cave's mouth. But Jesus vanquished every material obstacle. He overcame every law of man. Get a wonderful victory over every imaginable obstruction that human mind can think out against life. Vanquished them all. Just so, well, God is not dependent on what the human mind thinks out. God is just not dependent on what animal magnetism tries as a trick. God is dependent on himself. Love is only knowing love. And love is life. It's only knowing life, and therefore it's sustaining life and sustaining life, life out of God. And lastly, we see that therefore everything saved, that this purpose could not be defeated by any enmity towards life. The persecutors have failed to hide life in a sepulchre. And so Jesus brought a full and final victory over death and the grave. And it was, as he says, for the enlightenment of all men, salvation for the whole world, universal. He started with love, with a touch of mind, as if death is a universal belief. And just shows through the 7 days, evolved to the point where she takes away through every stage one belief away and away, until finally at the 7th day it is for the enlightenment of the whole world. The light breaks, that life is indestructible. If one reads those few pages about love as life, one just can't help feeling that certainty of life. See, the connection is so lovely. In love as principle, we have that rest and peace in act. We have that rest and peace in act. That Jesus passed into the Shekinah before us. That Jesus fulfilled God's mission and then sat down at the right hand of the Father in that peace and rest of a prince. And he never left that peace and rest anymore. And so the argument of death and grave could come to Jesus and couldn't touch him in that Shekinah. He was mentally, spiritually, consciously in that Shekinah. And so all the attacks towards that peace and rest which his persecutors tried out on him just failed. He was not hid. They tried to hide life in a sepulchre. But he was before hid. His life was before hid in God, in that Shekinah. And if we enter in that consciousness of the Holy of Holies, then the attack on that day falls by the wayside. Here is shown that Jesus individually proved that life sustained life, and that it is the purpose of love to sustain life, and not to let life go down. See, so in that passage of love as life we just see Jesus completely calm and untouched. We see of him that he was no terror. At the very point where she deals with the persecutors trying to kill Jesus, she says she was in no terror. He entered before into China in three principles. He sat down with his prince. He was in no terror. Temptation, sin, sickness, and death had no terror on. She says Jesus was out of reach of malignity and brutality. Says he was out of reach of the barbarity of his enemies. He was quiet in the lonely precincts of his tomb, which gave him a refuge from his foe. Says it was a rest place for him. How at that point, death, to overcome death is no more a struggle. There is no struggle in that whole paragraph, because we have reached already in Lava's principle that rest, where we rest in act. And then the overcoming of death is no more a struggle. It's just attack towards something where the attack finds no target and it falls right there. Well, I must stop here because in an hour I must be on the airfield. So I have to go.